Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca Mesut Özil. Alexis, en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
And what a weekend. What a weekend. Triumphant victory for the Arsenal, and everybody else fell flat in their face to varying degrees. I mean, it's just what we were looking for.
Yeah, it's pretty perfect, isn't it, in terms of the other results. Yeah, my spirits are certainly a lot higher today than they were last week, I have to say.
Mm. You enjoy the... there was a double-edged sword thing, wasn't there, with that Van Persie goal? Because, it's Van Persie scoring, he's happy, and you don't want him to be happy, but his happiness made Mourinho unhappy, and so you've got to go with the trade-off. Sometimes you have to accept a bit of happiness for someone you don't want for more unhappiness for a person who deserves it.
Yeah,
if you get
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. I do get you, and I think it was worth it to see Jose's face when that goal went in, turn away, disgusted, deflated. Mm. You know, I'm happy to pay the price of seeing Juan Van Persie have a brief moment of elation in order to witness Mourinho looking quite so grumpy.
Yeah, and look, all other things aside, it was a good weekend because, you know, if we put Chelsea in a different bracket at the moment because they are X amount of points ahead, it's still good to see Liverpool drop a couple of points against Hull, a team that we obviously drop points against. Manchester City beaten by West Ham. What a role West Ham are on.
Yeah, Alex Song's West Ham.
Mm.
He put in a good performance. It was one of the days where he was really trying.
Yes. and normally he is very trying, but he was really trying.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, a slight distinction there. a lot of the clubs who you would consider as our closest rivals, so you'd say City, Liverpool, United, even Tottenham, you know, you'd have to throw them in there, all drop points. So it was certainly a really positive weekend in that respect. I suppose it depends how much of a contender you consider Southampton. You know, are they going to stick up there? Are they in that race for that top four? Because they won again. They're looking fantastic at the moment.
Yeah, I don't really think so. I think it happens nearly every season, doesn't it? That one team has a really bright start. And I can remember a few years back, Reading were one of those teams. And, you know, as the season goes on, things will probably even themselves out. But, I mean, there is that, you know, people look at Southampton and go, well, look, they sold off most of their good players, brought in a new manager, got some new players in, and look, everything's wonderful for them. But, you know, how much of Koeman is Laudrup or Martinez? You know that way, that the first season that Laudrup had at Swansea, everyone was going, wow, this is the guy, he's amazing, he's brilliant. Yeah. And then, I don't know, where is Michael Laudrup now? Does anyone know?
I think, is he in Qatar or something like that?
I'll just Google him here.
You Google him. I'm pretty sure that he took a really strange job and he's taken Chico Flores with him.
Right.
Unbelievably.
Yes, he is the current manager of Qatar Stars League Club Lekwia. Or I don't know how you pronounce that. But yeah, I mean, that is, you know, from somebody who is being fated as the next big thing in Premier League management. Okay, we know why he's gone to Qatar, but, you know, it's a bit of a step down in terms of his football.
Well, yeah, I think, and Chico Flores has gone with him from Swansea. I'd say he's found his level, to be honest. I don't know how he was getting away with being a Premier League central defender. Well, he wasn't getting away with it. He was getting punished week in, week out. yeah, but, you know, you do get these flavours of the month. I don't think Southampton will quite, you know, last the course. I think last season they had a pretty good start too and then fell away somewhat.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, it was a great weekend really, and a clean sheet of all things.
Amazing. I think that was one of the things that pleased me most. Obviously, the result was the main thing, but the fact that we did have a clean sheet, it was something Wojciech Szczęsny said after the game. I probably should have brought this up if we were going to be talking about it, but you know, he said basically, I really don't care. He says, I don't care. I couldn't care less about the tempo of the game and how we played. And you expect a tough game here, but we kept a clean sheet and we haven't kept one for a long time, so it was good to get. And I think that's a reasonable outlook to take on things, particularly as the players themselves can't be unaware that we're struggling in terms of form. So when you are struggling, things tend to go against you. So, you know, to get that clean sheet, that extra little bit of confidence that we might take from this one, I think is very important.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, Per Mertesacker spoke out after the game with Anderlecht saying, you know, his performances maybe hadn't been at a level that they needed to be. And I thought he was really good, actually, at Sunderland.
Yeah, I agree.
He kind of held the defence together. And a lot of reorganisation was needed, especially when Kieran Gibbs went off. But I think his experience was really vital and helped us keep things relatively tight back then.
Credit where it's due as well to Monreal, who I thought had a good game at centre-half. There was a moment, maybe towards the end of the first half, where ball was played out to the touchline towards Stephen Fletcher. Monreal came in over the top of him, won the header, flattened him, just like a Steve Bold or a Tony Adams would have. Not that I'm saying he's as good a defender as those, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that you want to see. And maybe a couple of games there has done him some good. But if Gibbs is injured, then we're in a bit of a position, aren't we, that he's going to have to move to left back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say that, there is the possibility of restoring Mathieu Flamini to his Champions League run position of whatever it was, 2006.
Would that not say a huge amount then about the manager's faith in Hector Bellerin if he kept Monreal at centre half and played Flamini at left back rather than playing Bellerin? But
no, I think realistically you're right. I think it will be sort of everyone shifting over, Monreal to left back, Chambers to centre back, and Bellerin in at right back. And I'm not sure that's a hugely weaker back four than the one we're fielding at the moment, to be honest. I think, you know, Chambers and Mertesacker are both more natural centre halves than Monreal. So I think we could cope with that. But obviously it is incredibly worrying how thin we're getting. We haven't heard anything about that Kieran Gibbs injury. I guess we just have to hope for the best, really.
Yeah, interesting as well that when Chambers plays at centre-half, he plays the right side of centre-half as opposed to the left-hand side. I do wonder why that is, because Mertesacker obviously plays as the right-sided centre-half all the time when Koscielny is fit, and if Chambers is going to replace Koscielny, I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem strange, doesn't it? I mean, I imagine could only be because maybe he's had most of his football on the right-hand side as a right-back. Wenger feels he might be slightly more comfortable receiving the ball, you know, distributing the ball from that area. But
yeah.
I don't know. I think Pear looks a little less comfortable on the left. Generally, centre-backs do have a preference. It seems like a minimal thing, but I think it makes quite a big difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I always prefer the left myself.
Do you?
Yeah.
There you go. Sol Campbell was always the left.
Yeah.
And whenever he was over on the right, didn't look quite as happy. It's a curious thing. And I think it's, yeah, I agree. I would be, if it was up to me, I'd be keeping Pear where he's good and letting Chambers, you know, if it's unfamiliar to him on the right of centre-back, it's unfamiliar to him on the left as well. It doesn't seem to make quite as much difference.
Yeah. But,
a bit of an odd one. And it meant that when Gibbs went off, I think every single member of the back four had to change their position slightly.
Yeah, everyone moved just one to the left.
Which is quite destabilising, but we got away with it.
Yeah, and we're going to have to hope we can keep getting away with it, and let's keep some fingers crossed that the Gibbs thing isn't quite as bad as we all fear it is.
I mean obviously it will be. I mean, I don't know why.
Oh, I know it is. I mean, you know, tomorrow we'll get the announcement of Kieran Gibbs' untimely demise, and, rest in peace, Gibbsy, and all that. But, it was curious as well that the commentators were mentioning Gibbs having an injury before halftime. They said that he was struggling.
I had Russian commentary for this game, I must confess.
I had Dean Sturridge and some other guy, the commentator guy and Dean Sturridge.
How was that?
He doesn't sound the most excited person ever. Like, he's, you know, everything is quite monotone and flat, and, you know, he doesn't say ridiculous things like so many of the others. But he's not necessarily the most effusive. He's got a touch of the Phil Nevilles to him, but with a Midlands accent rather than the the Manchester one. So,
I see.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I mean, the Russian commentator was very excited, I have to say, for most of the game.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I guess.
I don't know what about.
Probably not the game itself. There could have been a wasp in the studio.
Yeah, it did sound like that at times.
It wasn't the best performance. Let's be honest about this. But should we, after a week in which the performances have been analysed to death, you know, after Hull, after Anderlecht, where we got away with it big time, another performance like that, look, what more can you say about it? So do you have to just kind of compartmentalise that and then say, okay, we all know we're not playing particularly well. Let's look at this and try and take as many positives from it as we can.
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to hope that performances will follow results. You know, if we can get some confidence from winning a few games, that might help us moving forward, because it's absolutely true that we're not playing well. I don't think anyone disputes that. I don't even know if we win that game without two massive ricks from Sunderland.
Mm.
Many thanks to Wes Brown and Vito Minoni, who provided some superb assists for Alexis Sanchez. But yeah, I mean, the performances aren't great. What I thought was really telling was Santi Cazorla's misses attracted quite a lot of attention. And I think that's because if you look at our last few games, we're not actually used to missing chances. We actually haven't missed any because we don't really create too many.
Yeah.
So when you see one go astray, it's actually quite an unfamiliar thing at the moment. And we weren't great going forward, but let's take the clean sheet, as Chesney says. Let's build on that. And, you know, we've got Burnley next. You'd have to think that might be a game in which our attacking game is going to click and we might rack up a few goals, that could be the one.
Mm, okay, so look, we can give some credit to Sunderland and to Minone and Wes Brown for their part in our goals, but also you have to have a player who can take advantage of those mistakes, yeah. Right? So you have to have a player who's on his toes, and in both cases, that was the situation with Alexis. With the first goal, he was on top of Wes Brown, and if there was a mistake, he was ready to capitalize. The same in the 93rd minute, Minone took a bad touch, but Alexis was already sprinting at him to close him down. And it's hard to look at this team and see anybody else who has got that desire, who would have that natural desire to, or just to anticipate that something might happen.
Yeah.
Too often we stand off, we're a bit passive, and then you look at a situation where you go, oh God, if he'd just been on his toes, if he'd been a little bit more aware, if he'd anticipated the header this way or that way. But Alexis is that guy. So for all the mistakes that Sunderland made, you have to give huge credit to Alexis for being there and for finishing them off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think we've seen a player with that kind of insatiable hunger since Andre Santos, probably. I mean, he is an awesome player to watch, Alexis, because as a fan, he gives you everything you want in terms of commitment and work ethic. And, you know, it's something you're used to saying about a player who comes through the youth system, you know, someone who's struggling to make the grade. But this is an established star working like that. And that's a pretty rare thing, to have someone with that much technical ability who works quite so hard. There are only a handful of players in world football, I think, who offer you that combination. One of which is Luis Suarez.
Yeah.
He's obviously crazy as well. But and I do think that's what led Arsene to Alexis, is that similarity. We know he wanted Suarez, and Alexis offers you a lot of the same qualities without being quite so unhinged. And I think without him, we don't win the game at Sunderland. I think you're right in that, you know, he was fortunate, but you make your own luck, don't you? And you do that by working hard. And it was interesting, Danny Welbeck was interviewed after the game, and he said that Arsene Wenger had specifically told Arsenal to close down their defenders when they were on the ball, presumably because they were lacking in confidence after being hammered last week. I don't think Wes Brown and John O'Shea are technically great anyway. And, it, you know, we were the beneficiaries there. So a little bit of credit due to the manager too. But what Alexis does off the ball is just superb. And he's got the quality to finish when those chances do present themselves.
Mm. Ted, Oops. What are you doing?
Hang on.
I was trying to get these Skittles, but I got...
Sorry, there we go. It was an autoplay.
I'm just going to have a cough.
There's an interesting comment from Arsene Wenger after the game where he talks about Alexis. He says he's not frightened to go forward. Sometimes you think his passing is not quick enough. but he's very efficient and he really plays to win. He's a winner. You think back perhaps to the decision to leave him on the bench for the North London Derby as one of the big mistakes of this season so far. And you guess that it's because perhaps he wanted to be more efficient with the ball. But I think he's now got to find the balance of, okay, maybe Alexis is going to take risks and he is going to try and do things that don't come off. But when you've got a team that really needs a spark, you just can't do without him.
No, I mean, we need him at the moment. I think he was a massive influence, actually, in Anderlecht. You know, the way he created that goal for Lukas Podolski with that little touch and getting to the byline, pulling it back. And obviously what he produced at Sunderland too, the week before at Hull, creating the equaliser for Danny Welbeck out of absolutely nothing. You know, we're reliant on him at present because our collective game isn't as good as it should be. So I think you've got to make that trade-off and say, well, in order to get points on the board at the moment, we need this guy in the team. I agree, it was strange when he didn't play against Spurs. It reminded me a little bit of Andrea Sharvin not playing. Was it the FA Cup semi-final or
against Chelsea?
Yeah, it was an odd situation where a guy in form, a kind of new star in the team, was left out of the side. And I think it's good that he's back in there. I think in a funny sort of way, the absence of Mesut Ozil might create more space for him to be involved more regularly.
But he played at number 10. I mean, he was playing...
Yeah.
Behind Danny Welbeck, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, I mean, someone asked us about that, I think, last week. I thought it was a really interesting experiment, and I thought it got him on the ball regularly and it seemed to work pretty well. Might be something to, you know, consider moving forward with, because I think it helps Welbeck a little bit as well, giving him someone who's prepared to get close to him and support him inside the penalty area.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think he's the most important player in the team at present, Alexis. And, you know, there'll be a lot of debate about his best position, but wherever he plays, he seems to produce. And that's just fantastic quality to have. His versatility is so important. So, it's only October and I would say I'm running out of superlatives already for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the players are too, because in the wake of the victory, you have Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain saying he's like Luis Suarez. There's a big piece which has just popped up on Arsenal.com from Danny Welbeck saying that Alexis is a pleasure to play with. You just wish perhaps a couple of them would just get a bit more on his wavelength when he is there gesturing people to come out and help him press, that he does need the help. It can't be left to him alone to be the driving force in the team, that if we can get men around him and if we can get people on the same wavelength with the same kind of attitude. See, the thing about him is it's second nature. Comes naturally to him to work that hard, whereas perhaps it's not the same for some of the others, which isn't to dismiss them or their qualities, but maybe it's just something that a quality that he has that not many players have, which is why it's in stark contrast when you see him play.
It's a mental and a physical thing with Alexis. So he's got that remarkable physical capacity, that amazing stamina that enables him to keep going for that long, but he's twinned that with, as you say, a desire that is just incredible. He's got such determination and such will to win. And I think that's something that's difficult to coach. I'm not sure that's something you can necessarily teach or impart. That seems to be something that is forged in players very early on, you know, those real winning characters. But yeah, it'd be great if some of the others could learn from that and pick that up, because that's what we need.
All right. In short, we love Alexis.
Yeah, in short, we certainly do.
All right. And in his shorts, perhaps. Short shorts. No, we'll leave that one there. All right, look, we're going to take a break. We're back with your questions in part two right after this.
Hello, welcome back to the Ask Us Extra. We're going to have a look at some of your questions now. And the first one comes from Steve Moore. His Twitter handle is SteveMoore4116. So I guess he's the 4,116th Steve Moore.
In the world or the UK?
Good question.
We're never going to know this.
No, we'll never know. They're all over the place, Arsenal fans. And his bio is disappointingly bare. Anyway...
Is that his actual bio, that he is nude and people look at that disappointingly, like, oh, there's Steve Moore bare again. I'm so disappointed with what he has to offer. All right, it just is.
It doesn't say that, but I think it's implied.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So he asks, I like this question, in a deal with the devil, don't know why you're dealing with the devil, but you are, right?
Right, okay.
Would you accept us winning the European Cup in exchange for Chelsea going unbeaten?
Oh.
That devil, eh?
That devil.
He's crafty.
Yeah, he's cunning, like Lucifer. Yeah. I think primarily anybody's first thought should be for their own team's success, right? Mm-hmm. So you would be denying yourself winning the Champions League just to protect something over which you have no real control. I would take the Champions League and Chelsea could go unbeaten because we already did it. We're first. Nobody can take that away from us. And we would have a European Cup. So for me, that's quite an easy one, I have to say.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want Chelsea to go unbeaten. I want them to lose many games. I would like the entire squad to contract some kind of communicable disease. Which renders
the time
them,
is right.
Yes, indeed. Perhaps not kills them, not all of them, right. Some of them, but the rest it leaves withered shells of their former selves. Apart from Branislav Ivanovic, who we could sign, because I like him. I don't know what it is. I know I should hate him, but every time I watch him play, I think, God damn, I wish he played for us. He's
maybe
one of the only players.
He's a voluptuous figure.
It could well be. It could well be. He's as strong as I don't know what it is about him, but I've a thing for him in a way.
He's very good.
He is very good. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I would like all misfortune possible to befall Chelsea. But ahead of that, I would like success to come our way. So I would take a European Cup and, you know, I can just then ignore, Chelsea doing that unbeaten thing. Because it wouldn't be special, would it? They'd be second. It would be. It's not like he could say, I am the special one. I have done something so special. We already did it. Fuck. So fuck off. So I could justify it that way.
I guess. For me, it's very hard for me to answer that because there's something unique about the achievement of the Invincibles that kind of elevates it above your ordinary trophy, in my mind, at any rate. And so for someone else to emulate that, would slightly take the sheen off it. It would make it to slightly less untouchable.
Nah, not for me. Not for me. We already did it. We did it years before anyone could do it. And we didn't do it with an oligarch, a rich man, bankrolling the team. We didn't do it, you know, we did it in a more organic way, you might say. So
yeah, we did.
You know, so for me, it wouldn't take the sheen off it.
Do you think, is it something you think about or worry about? Do you think it's possible that they could go through the season unbeaten?
I think they looked relatively good yesterday, but, you know, they don't look to me like a team that can go another 30 games. Is it 30 games or 29 games something without losing like somewhere along the way? You know, they've had a fantastic start to the season. No denying that, and they're a very, very good team, very powerful, you know, and I think they're probably going to win the Premier League. But, you know, it's a long season. Lots can happen. Injuries can happen. You know, if they pick up an injury to Terry or Cahill or both, you know, they're rocking at centre-half too. And I don't know that they'd be able to necessarily cope with that. So, look, yeah, I'd prefer if they didn't, and it's slightly worrying that they might, but if you were to ask me now, Chelsea go unbeaten and Arsenal win the European Cup, give me that European Cup.
You're saying deal, Noel Edmonds.
I'm deal. Saying deal. Give me the fucking trophy. Give me the trophy.
Okay. All right, we'll get you the trophy.
Yeah, you do that. All right, okay.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's one, and this comes from AFC Henry, at AFC Henry P. And he wants to know, after El Clasico, which was quite a good game
on
Saturday. Yeah. Football played with pace and power and skill. It was quite the antidote to what we saw at the Stadium of Light. After El Clasico, which player from each side would you want at Arsenal, excluding Messi and Ronaldo?
Oh, I see.
I don't know if you have to choose one from... I guess you have to choose one from each team.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. I think... Who played centre-half for Real Madrid? Was it Ramos? And...
Pepe?
I wouldn't want Pepe anywhere near the club.
No, because he's essentially evil.
Yeah, evil. He really is evil.
Yeah.
In fact, him scoring took a bit of the shine off that match for me.
Yeah.
I don't like seeing him too happy.
No.
It offends me. I'm looking through the team now. I'm trying to think in terms of what we need as well, you know. I'm trying to be strategic about this. Right, well, I would take from Barcelona... Oh, gosh. Do you know what? It's a difficult one, because in terms of what we need, Sergi Busquets would do a hell of a job for us.
Yeah.
But he is quite evil as well.
He does have that roly around, snide, foully, divey thing going on, but he is good.
He is very good. I think I'd have to be between him and Mascherano. I think I'd go for Sergi Busquets to sort of beef up the... midfield. Not even beef, it's just more sort of like snidiness, isn't it? He's cynical, but in a sort of very effective way. I mean, he can play as well.
Yeah.
And then I think I'd go for Sergio Ramos as well. Although he is very erratic at times at the back, he is a good player, and also he actually can score from set pieces, which is something that we just haven't had for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So he'd be my Real Madrid player. What about you?
I think I would probably go... I know he didn't play, but can we have Varane? I know he didn't play, but he's, you know, he's from Real Madrid. He plays
for
Real Madrid.
If he played, I would have been opting for him, probably. He looks like a...
Because Ramos likes a red card. Imagine Ramos and Koscielny starting games. We'd end up with nine men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the time. So I'm going to bend the rules slightly and take Varane from Real Madrid. And from Barcelona, yeah, I can see what you mean about Busquets, because he is a player that we need. So, yeah, I'll go with him as well.
Really? Suarez and Neymar?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of pure need... I mean, Suarez I wouldn't have anyway. Neymar, would he thrive in London? Or would he prefer the warmer climes of Spain and the cocktails and the girls in the hotels? I think he would. I think he'd struggle in London.
Okay.
Trying to justify that to myself. But, you know, look, if you look across the front line and you've got, you know, we've got... Alexis, we've got Walcott coming back, we've got Oxlade-Chamberlain in there, we've got Welbeck, and let's not forget Yaya Sanogo. So yeah, I think, you know, in terms of what the team needs, a player like Busquets would be more beneficial to us than a player like Neymar, who is a phenomenal talent, obviously, but there you go.
Okay, we'll have those in January.
Yeah, please.
Very good. Let's have another question. This is from Bill Harding. And he asks, do you think Winston Reid would be a good signing in January?
Ah, there's a question. We were discussing this, weren't we, on Saturday?
Yeah,
as we were watching West Ham. you told me, I wasn't aware of this, you told me that he has a contract which expires at the end of this season.
That is true. And he's currently in a very sort of Arsenal-esque situation where the manager and the board are sort of publicly saying, we're very confident he will sign, and he's very much not signing that contract.
Yes, I think that tells its own story, that he must fancy a move to a bigger club, with all due respect to West Ham. He's 26 now. He is 26.
Right, okay.
So he's sort of at the age where if he's going to make a step up, this is pretty much not the last chance, but he's, you know, when his contract is over next summer. I mean, he's done very well. He's done very well. When he arrived first at West Ham, and obviously I don't watch West Ham every week, I thought from what I did see of him that he was a little bit error prone. He was playing right back at first as well, wasn't he? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, he played right back quite a lot for them, yeah.
And then, you know, he seems to have grown into a very, very good player. So from that point of view, he fits the bill. He's available. Probably, given West Ham's financial situation, we could make them an offer they couldn't refuse in January.
Yeah. Especially with his deal expiring. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, why not? Why not? I mean, it's very difficult to look around and find the ideal central defensive candidates, but he ticks a lot of the boxes.
And you kind of feel that he's at a profile where, you know, it's often said it's difficult to find someone who's of requisite quality who also you could conceivably have on your subs bench. But I think he fits that bracket, and he could play probably with either of our centre-halves. He plays on the left of the centre-backs usually for West Ham.
Is he quick? I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know how quick he is. I don't think he's as quick as Koscielny, certainly.
Why doesn't Wikipedia have their stats listed in terms of, like, Football Manager? So we can click in there and go, Winston Reid, ooh, he's got 16 for pace.
Exactly. Damn it all. Come on, Wikipedia, get on it. I mean, I think it makes plenty of sense. He's got Premier League experience. For me, that's a really big thing. You know, he could slot into the team when required pretty easily.
I'm looking here at a website which gives his FIFA 15 stats.
Oh, well, that was bound to be absolutely true and accurate.
Okay, so acceleration 68. Not great.
That isn't good.
Sprint speed 79, which is all right for a centre-half.
Yeah, once he gets up there.
He's got 82 for heading accuracy. So
I'll take it. I mean, if Wenger's playing a lot of FIFA.
But only 43 for balance, which means he falls over 50% of the time.
More than 50%. He's like Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, that's a worry. That's a
Jack
worry.
Wilshere must have balance about 20, I imagine.
Maybe he's got it right. Does he only have one ear, perhaps? Maybe that affects his balance. And he's got a prosthetic attached. And nobody knows but him and his agent.
It's a cover-up.
The other thing about him as well is he could have to go off to the New Zealand Cup of Nations every January.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. They play, Middle Earth.
Right, okay. Mordor.
I mean, it's quite taxing physically.
Yeah, of course. Of course, up against all those orcs.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's one that makes sense. But as you said to me at the weekend, it makes so much sense that we just probably won't do it.
There we go.
That is the Arsenal way.
Yeah. So it is. All right, here's one. A couple of people have questions about Santi. Greg Cross, who's Greg Cross 82, asks, is Santi Cazorla done? Woeful set pieces, bar Wembley, erratic shooting, lightweight attacking. And Clive, who's at Clive PAFC, asks, does Santi epitomise the good and bad of this Arsenal? Technically wonderful and loved, but too small and too slow and inefficient. So there you go. Some questions about Santi, and you know he didn't have his shooting boots on at Sunderland, did he?
No, he does like to sky the ball, doesn't he? I mean, is it because he's so small that he can never get over the ball? Like it's just physically impossible
for a guy with the technique and the technical ability he has, for the way he fluffed those chances and fluffed a chance, I think it was one against Anderlecht as well, that he, you know, or Hull, I can't remember, but, you know, again, the same thing. He's kind of whacked the ball high into the stand.
Yeah, the Johnny Wilkinson. I think, well, if we're talking about stats and numbers and attributes, I think, you know, with Cazorla, his composure would be low. I think that's the problem. Technically, he's got all the ability in the world. You know, he can strike the ball superbly. But when he's presented with these chances, I don't know, he seems to get almost overexcited. I mean, he never quite strikes through the ball with the conviction you'd expect. I don't think he's done, though. I think that's very premature to say. I think he's got a lot to give. But I was thinking this weekend, actually, about quite how brilliant he was in his first season with us when he walked to the Player of the Year award. I mean, he was, you know, carrying Arsenal at times in the way that Alexis is now.
Yeah.
But he hasn't ever quite hit those heights again, really, has he? For me, anyway, in terms of his level of performance, it's not quite matched up to that brilliant first year.
No. It's a bit of a shame, really, because, you know, he's such a good player and such a likeable guy. And, you know, I people have sort of criticised him for not being involved, and I don't think that's the case. I think he's one of the guys who's nearly always trying to get involved and trying to make things happen. But maybe just with Ozil out and a bit of pressure or a bit of onus on him. But look, sometimes it's very difficult to judge a player's individual performance on the basis of or when a team is struggling, like we're struggling, that it seems almost a bit unfair. Like all the criticism that was headed Ozil's way because he played badly during the opening part of the season, but then so did the entire team. So, I don't know.
I think as well, in mitigation, I mean, he missed those chances late on against Sunderland, but I was very surprised that he stayed on the pitch as long as he did. I thought he looked very tired after about 70 minutes. And obviously that has a massive influence as well. So, you know, I think it's about using him intelligently. I hope his form can pick up because in full flow, he's one of the best players in the squad to watch, I think.
Where is that lorry? Is that outside your house or mine?
It's in this room with me now. Apologies.
That's okay. These things happen. Look, this is the dangers of live broadcasting, even though we're not broadcasting live, and we could stop this and simply wait for it to go, shall we?
We could do.
Yeah, I think we should.
Shall I have a look out the window?
Yeah. Oh.
No, it's still very much there. I'm going to have a look out the window.
Okay.
With me. Waiting.
Nah, I think we'll just carry on.
Bit of atmosphere.
If you could, yeah, just stop knocking things over.
That's me just knocking things over. Basically, rather than a proper desk, what I've got is like a kind of tray with all my equipment on it.
Very
exciting.
Like a tray you might give somebody breakfast in bed on, or just a dinner tray.
It's like a tray you would give someone breakfast in bed on, basically. Yeah, it's just like the closest thing I have to a proper desk, but it enables me to be plugged into the modem, you see.
Right. I'm not sure if you've heard of this place. It's a Swedish invention, and they sell really, really cheap furniture that would be handy. Something like that. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah. No idea. No, it's in the... There was a desk. It was thrown out recently. It has yet to be replaced. But,
right.
You know, this tray thing seems to be working brilliantly.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got it nailed down.
Yeah, certainly. I wish I did. That would stop it falling over.
Well, you'd have to nail it to your own legs and just sit there.
I mean, it would probably be better.
Ooh, all right.
It's really moving, the van now.
Yeah. I hope there's, like, other people down the road doing a podcast who are going to be bothered by that van.
I think it's moving away, though.
Yes.
It's getting quieter, isn't it?
I can hear it retreating into the distance.
We've scared it off.
Thank goodness. All right. The basic point on Cazorla, then, is...
Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're still recording. I'm not even going to be arsed editing all this out. Fuck it.
Cazorla.
Yes. Did we come to a conclusion? He's not playing very well, that was it. And he should play better, is that right? That's essentially it.
Something like that, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, glad we got that one so well answered so well. Right, your turn.
Okay, let's have this. This is from Andy Jackson. He spelled that with two S's, Jackson.
Right.
So his name might be Andy Jackson, or he might be Jack's son.
Right. Or he could also be related to Action Jackson. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Could be that. He asks, which commentator mispronunciation, or pronunciation, ironically, I don't know which it should be, annoys you most?
Mm-hmm.
These are the options.
Right.
Sir Chesney.
Right.
Cazola. Ozil.
Right.
Or Koscielny.
Right. See, the Sir Chesney one, maybe, if I'm sure one of our Polish listeners will tell us, could be accurate. I don't know if that's inaccurate, you know?
Yeah, they were debating this on Guardian's Football Weekly recently, actually.
Right. I think it's easier for us to go Chesney or Chesney or whatever, but it could well be, if you're pronouncing it correctly, that we're all pronouncing it incorrectly. What was the other one? Ozil. That's the only person who says that is Jamie Carragher.
Carragher, yeah.
Ozil. I don't know how he gets that. Koscielny, the only person who says that is Alan Parry on Sky. Koscielny, yeah, he's about the only one I ever hear saying that. And pretty much everything he says irritates me, so that's it. But the one that does my head in more than any other is Carzola.
Carzola.
Yeah, that's,
because that's not even how it's written.
No. I mean, it's not even difficult to say. If you just look at the letters, it's Cazorla. And the only issue then is if you want to do it the Spanish way and give it the old Cazorla. I mean, that's a matter of personal preference, I guess. But Carzola, no. It is not an automobile. It is not a former Italian great. Neither of those things
it's
combined.
It's not his vehicle.
No. Oh, my. Imagine a car shaped like Gianfranco Zola.
A very small car.
Would be very small and would look quite good on the side of a church.
Do you think that maybe some sort of link, because Cazola, or Cazola, is small and good at football, there's some sort of leap happening where it makes people think of Zola, and then, you know, they kind of pair them up in their mind and the pronunciations merge?
Maybe, but it could also just be that people are a bit, you know, silly and can't read.
I mean, we live in a world where people say Pelanty, so...
We do, where people actually have a job, despite the fact they say Pelanty. A Pelanty to Arzel. That's your Chris Waddle. Have you got any others that bother you?
I get criticised a lot for Olivier Giroud with a D or not. People are often pulling me up on that. I think I put a D in when it's unnecessary.
Yeah, Giroud.
But I think that stems from an early need to differentiate him from Johan Giroud.
Yes. I understand that.
Arsene Wenger once said in a press conference that Giroud was injured, and then there were all these headlines about Olivier Giroud being out incorrectly because people misinterpreted it.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, the problem is I'm not the best, so I can't criticise too harshly. I'm just trying to think if there are any others.
Well, there's the whole Gnabry thing, isn't there?
Yeah, see, apparently Gnabry is correct, isn't
it? Yeah. I remember when I used to read the Beano many years ago, I know that Dennis the Menace's dog was called Nasher, but I used to like to call him Gnasher, just because I just found that nicer in my head. Gnasher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, things have worked out perfectly for you then.
They have in the whole Gnabry thing. So if his career as a footballer doesn't work out, he could become Dennis the Menace's sidekick.
Faithful accomplice.
Yeah. Gnasher Gnabry. But there you go. Is it my turn or is it...
Yeah, it is.
All right, I think we'll have one more, and then we'll probably call this very noisy Arscast Extra. Pronounce it dead.
Yeah.
This one comes from Mitesh Khatri, and he wants to know: would you rather have Podolski's super cooled blood of an assassin, or a second mouth like the aliens in Aliens? I'm trying very hard to find the connection between the two.
And no, I thought they were going to be kind of more, do you know what I mean? Like antonyms or, you know, something where the opposition was more clear.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the aliens in Alien used the second mouth for.
For is like, just for like sticking out and looking fierce.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty gruesome looking things because they're all dripping with alien acid saliva and all that.
So again, as often with these things, there's one choice we've been offered that I cannot really see why I would take. I'm not sure why I would want the second mouth.
Well, what if you were eating some scampi, right? So you went to the chipper
and
you got some scampi and chips.
Yeah.
But you wanted to enjoy the taste of the scampi and the taste of the chips separately rather than in one big mush.
Well, so actually, I often do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one mouth, you have the scampi, and in the other mouth, you have the chips. So you got to assume that both mouths have a tongue, they've got the taste buds. So that way you could enjoy two separate things without conflating the taste of them. I know, this is pretty stretching it, really, isn't it? That
I mean, I could just eat the scampi in my one mouth and then eat the chips.
Yeah, like a mouthful of scampi, then a mouthful of chips. Yeah, you could do that.
I don't have to. I mean, and also the ice cool blood, is that literal? I mean, like, is my blood actually cold? Am I a reptile, basically?
I don't know. He said super cooled blood of an assassin. Now, I'm not sure that all assassins have super cooled blood because, for example, the guy that shot John Lennon outside of his apartment did not have super cool blood because he got caught. He wasn't like some cool guy who took him out from distance. He just walked right up to him and went, pow, 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 and that's the end of John Lennon. That wasn't super cool. That was a bit stupid. So I'm not sure that we know enough about Podolsky's assassination skills to make a judgment on that one.
I'd still go for the super cool blood, though, I think.
Mm.
I just think, you know, the second mouth seems to me to present more problems than solutions.
Yeah, I understand that. But I would go for the second mouth just because, just to be different. And also, you just never know when you're going to be in space on a massive spaceship and Sigourney Weaver is trying to kill you. And in those situations, a second mouth might well be useful.
That's good. Always be prepared.
Yeah, because Sigourney Weaver, she's quite the dangerous woman.
The marksman. She's got that Podolsky blood.
She does. So, you know, you'd hate to be in that position and think, oh, God, I've got assassin's blood when really I needed a second mouth.
It is annoying when that happens.
Yeah. So, for me, second mouth. There you go.
Glad we cleared it up.
Yeah. All right. I think that might do it for this week.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's been lighthearted. It's been a good weekend.
Yeah. And, yeah, we need an escape, don't we, from everything, generally speaking.
From watching our team.
Yeah. well, look, we do have Burnley this weekend, so hopefully that will be another good day out, another good result, and we can look ahead to that on the Arsecast on Friday, and we can discuss it all in depth next Monday on the Arsecast Extra.
I look forward to it.
All right, until then, take it easy, folks.
Bye-bye.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.